Thank you very much for the invitation and for the introduction. So I want to start with the motivation. So one of the topics of this semester is the connection between dynamical systems and minimality, and my talk is about this connection. I start with the part from dynamical systems. So one of the weakest version of Hilbert 16 is Dulac's problem. And Lyashenko's proof of Dulac's problem uses the theory of transition maps. The following picture. Here is the singularity. Here is some part of a polycycle. And here the trajectory is. And here you have two cross sections. And here starts the trajectory. And here it ends up. And these are the so-called transition maps. And these are very important in the work of Lyashenko to show, to solve the last problem that a polynomial vector field in a plane has only finitely many limit cycles. Well, we have seen this picture many times during this semester. And the first but non-trivial case is the following one, that P, the singularity, is a hyperbolic settle. This means that the linear part has this form in some nice coordinate system, where lambda and zero are the eigenvalues. They are not zero and of different sign. Now, Lyashenko or Dulac and Dulac has shown the following properties of the map T. First of all, the P function T of X has a holomorphic extension to a so-called standard quadratic domain on the Riemann surface of the logarithm. So here, this is called a standard quadratic domain. And this lives on the Riemann surface. Not talking anymore. On the Riemann surface of the logarithm, which is the usual staircase. And second important thing, that T, this goes back to Dulac, that T of X has asymptotic expansion in those terms. So infinite sum. Here you have real powers, the powers positive tending to infinity, and Pn, there are logarithmic polynomials. So we have here polynomials, and then you plug in the logarithm. And to be more precise, the exponents have the following form, k plus l, times the ratio of the eigenvalues, the k and l are natural numbers. Z is x. Yeah. No. So x is a real variable, which is part of the Riemann surface, and z is the complex variable. And then you can apply log x or respectively log z. So z is x. And these two observations guess that tx lives in a certain quaternary class, which is determined by the asymptotic expansion and by the expansion to a standard quadratic domain. And this was the first argument in Lyashenko's work to show that there are only finite minimum limit cycles for polynomial vector fields. We have more information on this asymptotic expansion depending on this ratio lambda divided by mu. First, if this ratio is irrational, then all these pn's, they are constant. So here, if only here is constant, so then we just have more or less a generalized power series. But when the ratio is rational, this is called the resonant case, then in general these pn's are not constant polynomials. So we have, if we look it up again, we have here really log terms. And this makes life much complicated, much more complicated. So again, we have two cases. Case one, when the ratio is irrational. Case two, when the ratio is rational, and then logarithmic terms. So in case one, in joint work with Jean-Philippe and Patrick, we showed omnimality of this quasi-empty class, and therefore omnimality of the transition maps. Some words to the proof. So the proof relies on a blow-up algorithm for suitable generalization of this quasi-empty class in one variable to several variables. And this blow-up algorithm and the idea of the proof, this is in the spirit of previous work on omnimality established by Lau and Patrick beginning or middle of the 90s. To get a feeling for this blow-up process we have in mind, I want to sketch the ideas in this simple case when we have no log terms. So in two variables, we get a function which lives on a square of a standard quadratic domain, and f has an asymptotic expansion of this kind. It should be clear. And now to show established omnimality, we have to study sets like this here. There is f0, the zero set of this function. And for this, we use the blow-up algorithm. And I want to illustrate this in the following example. The f is of the following special form, which function g in a class times x plus h times y, where g and y are units. They are not zero near the origin. And the idea is, first apply singular blow-up substitution. Substitution of the form xy goes to x times x and xy, the usual quadratic blow-ups. And what do we get? After applying the blow-up, we can factor out x, because here is x and here is x times y. This is the dominating monomial. You can factor out here x. And here, this is small. When y is small, this is unit. So this is not zero near the origin. So the behavior of this function is dominated by this easy monomial near the origin. And of course, when I apply the other singular blow-up substitution, the same appears. Then I have to factor out y. So, what was achieved? Well, I can control f of xy on this set. So f of xy is defined on the first quadrant. So you can define, we can control it on this and this. Why? In the domain 1, here is y small compared to x. This refers to the singular blow up, where this second coordinate is small compared to the first coordinate. We always work near the origin. And the same here, here is x small compared to y, and we get the other singular blow up. What is in between? So in between, here is y comparable to x. They are of the same size. Therefore, we need a so-called regular blow up. The xy goes to x times lambda plus y, where lambda is a positive constant. And you see here, this here is of the same size as y. And then we can control it in between. And what is now the advantage when applying a regular blow-up substitution? Well, this function, this is now defined around zero in the y-coordinate. So for small negative and small positive y. Therefore, it's analytic in y, and this is an improvement, because gaining an analytic variable improves the situation. And what do we see? So in the case 1, where no log terms are around, it's enough to use algebraic blow-ups, so usual quadratic blow-ups. And how does this work in general? So in general, such a function, two variable, has finitely many minimal monomials with respect to the following ordering. So two such monomials, this is smaller than this here, if and only if each exponent are ordered this way, or if and only if this holds, where we work with the partial order on n square, so the product order, which is a partial order. And so once again, by applying singular blow-ups, we can order the monomial, as it was the case in the example, that we can factor out the monomial and the remaining is a unit. So this is the idea of using singular blow-ups. And by regular blow-ups, we gain an analytic variable. This is the idea of the blow-up algorithm when we have no log terms around. So, now in the second case, when there are log terms, this case, omnimality is open. And it's definitely a hard problem. Why? Well, you don't see the logarithmic terms when you do estimates with the transition maps, because the logarithmic terms are very small. You don't see them when you do estimates, when you do arguments being quasi-analytic or not. But as we all know, in the work of omnimality, that logarithmic terms, they are really there when you want to prove omnimality. And to solve this problem, to show that also in this case the functions are omnimal, okay, what would we get? Well, of course, omnimality of all transition maps at hyperbolic saddles, and also new omnimality results for the Riemann mapping theorem and the Dirichlet problem. I don't want to get into this stuff, it's written in abstract. I just want to say that it would be nice to have the result that this is omnimal. So, but with logarithmic terms, we still have this quasi-empty class by Ilyashenko. So what do we want? Well, we want again some blow-up algorithm inside this class or with these classes. And I think also Patrick and Jean-Philippe, we had previously some attempts how to establish the blow-up algorithm, and we failed because, well, what is the first and natural approach to this? So let's first consider functions in two variables. We get, of course, functions of this form. Here again, P and N are polynomials in two variables. So we have log x and log y, and here powers of x and y, and u is a standard quadratic domain. We have to consider such functions just by multiplying two one-variable functions in two different variables. So we have to consider functions like this. Therefore, for simplification for this talk, I restrict myself to all these exponents are natural.
I just remind myself, U is the quadratic domain?
Yes.
So X and Y are compounds,
right? Yeah, but for all of the talk, you can think of real variables. So, but in a possible blow-up algorithm, we have to blow up monomials of this form. Log x to the power, log y to the power, x to the power, y to the power. Because they appear here. These are somehow the monomials. And we have to blow up. And what is our hope? Well, let's blow up and use the properties of the logarithm to make our life easier. Logarithm is not as good as just this function, power functions, but logarithm is also not that bad. Okay. So, we want to blow up finitely many monomials of this kind. And the first idea is, well, use the usual algebraic blow-ups as above to order just these parts. So don't care about the logarithmic parts, but order these parts, which can be done by algebraic blow-ups. And therefore, we have to plug in something like x to the y in the singular blow-ups. We use this property of the logarithm. And for regular, use this property, that log in 1 plus y is a power series in y. So we also here gain something analytic in, sorry, should be the other way around. X and y. So again, analytic in y. Okay. So far, it's okay.
So you would definitely be using the Riemann surface, because that formula, log x, y, log x, log y, is not true. I mean, just in the context.
Yeah, yeah. But definitely, we can only think of the real case. Everything is now real. This Riemann surface was just used in this talk to establish this quasi-empty class. But for the blow-up algorithm, we think of real variables. Okay, so, and now, second idea, to control the log parts. So what is the second idea? Well, let's make this shift as...
Did the first part work?
Yeah, that's but it's not very helpful. So the second part, you shift this here new names, so S and T goes to infinity. Then you have monomials, which are now usual powers in S and T, and you have these terms. And now you want to order the S and T part. So again, you can do this by using algebraic blow-ups. Okay, we use algebraic blow-ups to order this part, which is the same as this part here, by this shift. But now, the problem starts. Why? By applying singular blow-up, we get something like S times T. So therefore, we get new monomials e to the power minus st. Shifting back is something like this. So we get new kind of monomials. First problem. And in C, even more problems. I want to illustrate it on an example. We consider those two monomials, x and this here. Then in a non-logarithmic part, this is ordered. So this is the x and x times y. These are ordered. This is the minimal. And in the logarithmic part, it's also ordered. Here we have 1, here we have log x, but it's ordered the other way around. And here, algebraic blow-ups are not successful anymore. In this case, we need exponential blow-ups to control this here, log x, y. So we need blow-ups of the following kind, which are not usual standard blow-ups. And this is just the beginning. So it's getting more complicated and complicated, and myself, I didn't know how to control this. Yeah.
But then, of course, then log x is a big negative number.
But log x times x is still...
Uh-huh.
But the idea formally, you want to factor out x, and then you get some infinity, going to infinity. That's the problem.
That's the...
That's incomparable, yeah. So, and this is just the beginning. So it's getting out of hand, and I think my colleagues didn't know how to go on, how to establish this formally. So it's really the following problems. So what are the monomials we have to work? What are the necessary blow-ups? And then how to define the appropriated classes in several variables, because when we don't know the monomials, that's almost impossible. So it's really a problem of bookkeeping. So we can start doing the process from the beginning, some examples, but bookkeeping is, at least for me, was impossible in this case. So Patrick, Schofield and me were thinking also during this program how to solve this, and now I want to introduce a more systematic and promising approach to this problem. So all this is far away from being solved or being written down, but I think I present ideas which are worth to follow and which might be successful. So now a more systematic and promising approach. To warm up, I want to deal with monomials in one variable. So we want to work with terms tending to zero as far as possible. So therefore, for the reasons Lau also asked, we work with 1 over log x instead of log x. Then we also get negative exponents. Just a shift. And we obtain the following definition. A monomial in one variable is an expression of x to the p, 1 over log x to the q, such that either this monomial is constant 1, so if p and q is equal to 0, or m tends to 0 as x tends to 0. This is a monomial in one variable. So as usual, as without log, what is a monomial is x to the power y to the power, and it goes to infinity, it goes to 0, as x, y goes to 0. And here the same definition. And you get immediately the following remark. So if p and q are the exponents, the support of m, then of course p has to be positive, and when p is 0, then q has to be positive. So this is a monomial so this is the same as x times log x, and this here minus 2, this is not a monomial. Okay. And this is very crucial. In one dimension, monomials should be totally ordered. So, these monomials are totally ordered. So, one monomial is smaller or equal to the other. So, M1 divides M2. This means that the M2 divided by M1 is again a monomial. This is the same that the support is smaller or equal to the second support in the lexicographical order on Z2. So we have monomials in one variable and they are totally ordered. So without log terms we just have these monomials, with log terms we have these monomials. So in one case, in the dimension one case, it's not that terrible. And now, the monomials in two variables. So, some new notation. So, in one variable, just think back, you have monomials x1 to the power n1, x2 to the power n2, the x2 is minus 1 over log x1. Just notation. And now, a monomial in two variables is a monomial in x1 to x4, and here the usual abbreviation for x to the power n is this expression here. And here the definition. A monomial in two variables is an expression of this form. So as usually, such that either m is constant, so all the exponents are zero, or m tends to zero as x goes to zero, but now not on r to 4, but on this surface in r to 4. So, on this surface, where x2 is minus 1 over log x1, and x4 is minus 1 over the log x3. So this here, this is the one-dimensional case, and here we have the two-dimensional case. And again, what is a monomial? A monomial is something which goes to zero on this variety on the surface. So monomials live on this two-dimensional surface in 4-space. Nothing happened so far. It's just another point of view. Just an additional remark. of course, monomials in two variables are partially ordered, and the partial order is given by the product order on set 2 times set 2, where each one is lexicographically ordered. So also nothing new. But changing the point of view that all these variables, they are equal and live on the surface. So previously, x2, so these log terms, they were not the same level as this. But now we treat them all equally and they live on this surface. And this new point of view gives the following advantage for the Plauer process. First advantage, only the usual algebraic blow-ups are necessary. For example, an algebraic blow-up between the variable x1 and x4. So x4 was minus 1 over log x3. This is the same as an exponential blow-up between x1 equals x and x3 equals y. And we can restrict ourselves to algebraic blow-ups because still our monomials are of the form we still have the usual exponents. So as previously, but now we are working on the surface V. Second advantage, we know what the monomials are. And third advantage, the variety V changes during the blow-up process. But now everything is shifted to the variety, and the variety V changes in a controlled way. And now bookkeeping is possible. Let's see this. Let's apply singular blow-ups between the variables x1 and x4. So sigma is a finite composition of such singular blow-ups. And if I apply the sigma to a monomial, then we get a monomial with this exponent, where S is a linear map, so it's a 4 times 4 matrix with only positive natural entries. Just to see that applying blow-up substitution to a monomial gives, of course, a monomial. And now the following crucial observation. So given a monomial which is non-constant on the situation as in the previous part 2. So x is a monomial and is a monomial and lives on the variety V. Then I apply the sigma, then this monomial, the new monomial, lives on this variety V sigma. I also applied the sigma, which also monomials, and of course, the new monomial also goes to zero as x goes to zero on this new variety. So, and therefore, it's clear now what are the monomials when doing singular blow-up substitutions. So, definition, what is a sigma monomial? This is an expression such that m is either constant or m tends to 0 as x tends to 0 on phi sigma. And this is a big advantage. By applying the usual blow-ups, we are not changing the monomials still of this kind, but we are changing the variety. But this allows bookkeeping. So, the previous part, we introduced first the case where sigma was the identity. And once again, okay, the sigma monomials, they live on the variety V sigma, and V sigma changes during the blow-up process.
These varieties can become very complicated, I guess.
Yeah, but it's still of the form. Sigma x2 is minus 1 over log sigma x1 and so on. Everything is encoded in here, so these are again monomials. And you have this log varieties. They are of course definable in the real sense exponential, but our hope is to use the good properties of this uminimal structure. So, and now, why are our algebraic singular blow-ups, why are they sufficient? For the following reason. We have two orderings on sigma monomials. So here two sigma monomials, which live on V sigma. Then, first, the first order is defined, well, if and only if the ratio is again a sigma monomial, as previously. And the second ordering, formal one, this is smaller equal to compared to this formally, if and only if the exponents are ordered for each I. You see, in the algebraic case, these two are the same. So without log terms, these two are the same. But in our case, working on our sigma monomials, those two might be different. But what is the idea? So clearly, if there is formally smaller equal, then also with respect to the first order. But what is the idea? So given a function in two variables, this has finitely many, or should have, we have to define this still, should have finitely many minimal monomials with respect to this order. And then we can use the usual algebraic singular blow-ups to order them formally. This is possible by usual algebraic blow-ups. And if they are formally ordered, then they also ordered with respect to this, and then I'm normalizing it. Then I'm happy. So, algebraic blow-ups are sufficient. But, what about regular blow-ups? Now, I was just talking about regular blow-ups, but as we've seen previously, about singular blow-ups, but as we have seen previously, we also need regular blow-ups. In their first observation, that not all singular blow-ups are necessary. So not all singular blow-ups between all variables x1 to x4 are necessary. For example, so in the base case, the sigma is identity, there is no blow-up necessary between x1 and x2. Why? Because they're already ordered. This one, x2, is big compared to this one, so no blow-ups necessary. So we only have to look at so-called relevant blow-ups, respectively relevant final composition of such blow-ups. And now the following theorem, which is not yet proven in detail, but we have a lot of hints that this is true, the following. So let's say we are at a certain stage in our blow-up process, and we have here relevant sigma. And now our blow-up process demands a new relevant blow-up sigma ij. Then, near the origin, before applying the sigma ij, this variety is a graph over xy and xj. So I write x for this, y for this. So before I want to blow up between xy and xj, between x and y, and here p sigma is a graph over x and y. And what are f and g? F and g are the explicit solutions to this equation, to this implicit equation, and of course they are definable in this Unimal structure. And now, so we have monomials of this kind, and now applying a regular blow-up. So we have to here fx, x times 1 plus y, and then we can write this here as a conversion sum, and the variables y, and the coefficients by applying the chain rule to this function is of the following kind. So again, improvement analytic in y. But now, if they would get new classes of monomials, this would be not very nice. So we have to control these terms. But f and g, we get f and g by using the implicit function theorem. So by using implicit function theorem, f and g are c infinity. And by the implicit function theorem, the derivatives can be expressed by the derivatives of the equation of these equations. And so far we didn't use it all. So just to make it clear what I mean. So if we have here a C infinity function which is invertible at zero, then what is the derivation of the inverse function is given by this. You have to invert the matrix. And a kind of this version you also have for implicit functions. And so far we have not used the log terms, the properties of log, and now we use it. We use the derivative of log is 1 over t. And then if you look at this expressions, then you can control somehow the derivations. And again, the theorem in quotation marks is the following, that these terms, they are sums, is a sum of monomials in x, f of xx, g of xx. So again, with the same data as above, but where y equals x. And x lives on the variety where xi equals xj. So again, encoded, so this monomial lives on this variety. So again, everything is encoded in this variety. But this sounds now very good. But the situation is in general not that easy. Since the projection of V sigma, the variety, to the xy plane is in general not all of the first quadrant. So we had this phi sigma is x, y, f, and g. But here we do not get everything. Let's illustrate this in an example. So we start with the base case and we apply the following singular blow up between the variables x2 and x4. Then we get the new v sigma is this here. And since we are working close to zero, let's assume that x2 and x4 is small equal to 1, then this expression is small compared to 1, to this here. So this expression is small compared to this here. So if I project onto x1, x3, we get something like this here. Because, again, this here compared to this, therefore this here is small compared to this. So in general, we can have the following picture. So again, I'm projecting to the xy plane. Then this is the domain we get on the xy plane. Then all the singular blow-ups are not relevant. I just have regular blow-ups. And of course, by regular blow-ups, I want to end up in my domain. Therefore, we need regular blow-ups of this form. Cx times 1 plus y squared, a little bit above this Cx. But again, this phi of x is again given by v sigma, where one variable is constant. This defines this phi of x. So again, encoded in this variety. So what do we see? We start with this variety v sigma, and we do something with the variety. One variable is equal to the other, one is constant, and so on. But everything is encoded in this variety. Okay, all is encoded in this variety. So, but again, these are the ideas. These are the strategy to prove the optimality with the logarithmic terms. There is still a lot of work to do. First of all, okay, to rigorously establish this blow-up algorithm, then to define the appropriate quasi-analytic sigma classes, to really have quasi-analytic classes. Then for these classes, we have to apply this blow-up process we have in mind successfully. And then, once we have this blow-up process, we are not yet there at optimality. As in previous work, then usually we have to start a Gabrielov machinery to establish optimality. And our hope is also start the Gabrielov machinery, but now with respect to this optimal structure. So previously, Gabrielov machinery was also done more or less in quadrants, or let's say on semi-algebraic sets. Gabrielov machinery is also always respect to semi-algebraic sets, and now we want to do this Gabrielov argument with respect to this optimal structure. So our functions are defined on V sigma, and they are definitely definable here, but they are not thin algebraic. And then our hope is at the end, after long work, that we can establish omonormality. Thanks very much.